The third case for oral arguments this morning is, you'll have to forgive me if I mispronounce this. Wait a minute, we're missing an attorney, aren't we?
He's standing at the podium.
Oh, okay. Yeah, up to the podium. All right. Duval Cottrell, is that? I'm not real comfortable on pronouncing the names correctly, the appellants. Could you help me with that? The appellants. No, no. I know who you are, but I'm wondering. It's Natalie Duval. Is it Cottrell?
I'm not sure about that.
All right. Well, we'll have to. It's twice. All right. And the appellee is Karen Hargrave. The appellant's attorney is Mr. Baldwin, who's at the podium, who's from Custer. And the appellee's attorney is Mr. Patrick Ginsbach from Hot Springs. You have 20 minutes, sir, and you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Justices, Counsel. This matter is entitled, in the matter of the estate of Paul Duval. Paul Duval was an individual that lived in Custer, and while he was living there, he went on a rock climbing expedition and fell and was killed in June of 2008. The decedent was survived by my clients, who are the daughters of Paul Duval. An intestate succession proceeding was initiated in their behalf, and the appellee herein, Karen Hargrave, intervened and petitioned to be found as the common law wife of the decedent by virtue of the laws of Oklahoma and Mexico. The circuit court ruled in her favor, did find that there was a valid common law marriage in both Oklahoma and in Mexico, and by virtue of that, Hargrave became entitled to be the personal representative of the estate of the decedent and also an heir to that estate. The facts, I believe, are basically not at issue, and they are as follows. Number one, the decedent died intestate. Number two, the decedent was survived by two daughters and his companion, Hargrave. That decedent and Hargrave never had formally married in any jurisdiction. And that Hargrave and the decedent traveled in different places. They owned a home, or decedent owned a home in Custer. They traveled through Oklahoma and traveled to other states and had a winter home in Mexico. South Dakota and almost every state in the Union does not recognize common law marriage. Our code, section 25129, enacted in 1959, requires that every marriage, in order to be recognized, must be solemnized and recorded as provided in the code. Even prior to the enactment of that statute, there were a number of cases where common law was urged and denied in the courts of South Dakota. At the same time, our courts do recognize marriages celebrated in other jurisdictions, and obviously that happens a great deal. The difference here is that there is a conflict between the laws of South Dakota and the laws of other jurisdictions. And the question then, faced with that conflict, will the courts of South Dakota recognize a marriage in another jurisdiction, otherwise not valid in South Dakota? I believe that the ruling case is the case that I have cited entitled Garcia versus Garcia, and the critical part of that case, well, let me tell you what the case was about. In South Dakota, South Dakota did not recognize marriage between first cousins. At the same time, California did allow marriages between first cousins. The parties came to South Dakota, and an action was brought to annul that marriage as not being valid, and the South Dakota court upheld the validity of the marriage in California, notwithstanding the fact that it was contrary to the South Dakota statute, but with the proviso that at the time of the celebration of that marriage, that the parties were domiciled in California. I submit that this is the ruling case yet today, and there's never been any case that's changed or superseded that finding. There are three cases that have been cited by the appellee, and the first one being Svensson's case, which was not a question of common law marriage claimed in any other state, but rather in South Dakota. The parties traveled as husband and wife in other jurisdictions, and the court denied the validity of that marriage, or denied the existence of a common law marriage. Bracken versus Bracken, much the same thing. It was not a case where it is alleged that the parties were married by virtue of another laws of another jurisdiction. And again, the court denied that this was a common law marriage. In Scott's estate, which I have also cited in my brief, the same principles set out in Garcia is set forth. The parties there about 150 years ago were in the state of New York, lived there 15 years. At that time, New York recognized the common law marriage, and the court seems to imply that they would have recognized that marriage, but at the same time, the common law marriage asked in South Dakota was not, for other reasons, was not found to exist. In this case, there is not a finding that the parties were domiciled as required by the case. The case simply finds that there was a common law marriage that existed in both states. It is well established in South Dakota that you can only have one domicile at a time. That's in the Estate versus Galata, 1999 case. And so it is obvious that that the court did not find and could not find, if the court is finding that there is a valid common law marriage in two different places, Mexico and Oklahoma, obviously they could not find the couple to be domiciled in both those places at the same time.
Wouldn't we have to look, as far as the domicile requirement, look to those states, or in this particular case, the country, and to see what they recognize as a common law marriage in that jurisdiction, and maybe domicile isn't something they're recognizing?
I'm sorry, I didn't...
Well, when we're looking at a common law marriage, don't we have to look at the requirements or how that jurisdiction determines whether or not it's a common law marriage?
Exactly.
And whether or not domicile is required, isn't that depend on the law of that particular state?
But we are asking to decide in South Dakota whether a marriage is valid in another state. And again, the Garcia rule is...
But it's not... We don't look at our own statutes. We look at what the statutes are in that other state, do we not?
But the question, Your Honor, I believe, is not whether the marriage is valid in that other state. It's whether or not the individuals are subject to the jurisdiction of that state. And I submit that they are only subject to the jurisdiction of that state when there is this conflict of law, if they are in fact domiciled in that jurisdiction.
Well, you know, just from my own personal experience, we have South Dakotans who fly to Mexico and get married by a Mexican priest or a judge. And you're saying that we can't recognize those as valid marriages in South Dakota?
Absolutely not. We're talking about two different things. You're talking about a ceremonial marriage, and our law is very clear that we recognize ceremonial marriages from around the world. But this is not a ceremonial marriage.
Even if they're not domiciled in Mexico, they can fly down there for a weekend, get married, or Las Vegas or any place else, get married and be back here, even though they're not domiciled in those places.
That is correct, Your Honor. I submit the rule is different because those incidents that you're referring to are not in contradiction of the South Dakota law. We recognize ceremonial marriages.
So does the statute, does our statute say that the person has to be, in order to have us recognize a common law marriage, they have to be domiciled in the place where that marriage is recognized?
I believe the Garcia case does say that, Your Honor. And there's good reason for it.
We have a statute, though, 25138, that says any marriage contracted outside the jurisdiction of this state, which is valid by the laws of the jurisdiction in which such marriage was contracted, is valid in this state. So it's a contract that we look at, not the ceremony, it looks like to me. That's the statute that this legislature has passed.
And there's nothing in that statute that says anything about domicile. It just says if you make a marriage in another state, it's valid in our state.
But my position, Your Honor, is that this is not a marriage. It's a different type of relationship. It is an implied relationship called a common law marriage, different than a ceremonial marriage.
All right, well, let's get to the question of whether there was a common law marriage in the two places the trial court said there was, Mexico and Oklahoma. Can we do that? Can we talk about Mexico? Is there common law marriage in Mexico?
There is not, Your Honor.
So how could the trial court say there was?
The trial court, first of all, the statute, the laws cited and clearly cite that there are three different relationships in Mexico. One is a common law marriage, get the term married in front of a church or in front of a justice. And the third is a concubinage. And the Mexican law does not recognize, it's clear they do not recognize a common law marriage. And in the court's findings, you will find that they find that a common law marriage is the same as a concubinage. And I've provided authority to the contrary. There is no such thing as a marriage. There is a concubinage in Mexico. And the findings blur the distinction, simply calling that it is a marriage, which in Mexico is called a concubinage. South Dakota has no recognition whatsoever of a concubinage.
So now, if I understand, maybe just for the sake of the audience here, a concubinage is a situation where a man and a woman live together, and one, either the man or the woman, can be the other person's concubine. Is that right?
That's my understanding. There's no reference in South Dakota Code anywhere. As I look, I could find no reference to concubine. My minister told me that his authority was the Bible, and King Solomon had 1,000 concubines, and a lot of wives can seem to distinguish between the two.
All right, so let's talk about Oklahoma law.
All right.
How did the trial court decide that under Oklahoma law they had a common law marriage?
Well, again, the statutes of Oklahoma do not recognize common law marriage, and the exception to that is a case that is cited by the appellee. I believe it's called Brooks v. Sanders, and there is this case law exception to the prohibition against common law marriage in Oklahoma. And the key phrase that I find in that exception is that there must be an actual and mutual agreement to be married. And this does not predicate upon living together or holding yourselves out as husband and wife. It is very technical and specific that they must find that there is an actual and mutual agreement to be married. And in this case, there is no evidence of such an agreement. I'd like to read a couple of statements that are in evidence. One of the statements is that the Hargrave was asked why she and decedent had not married or not had a formal marriage ceremony. And here is her statement. Well, because we had marriage ceremonies before that ended badly for us, so we didn't think it was necessary. And this clearly indicates that there was not an agreement to be married. Another time, in 2001, Hargrave executed a quitclaim deed, signed it as a single person, and when asked asked when her common law marriage began, she said, well, it was after that date, and it was a gradual process. Another statement she made was this. Was there ever a point where she and the decedent sat down and made an agreement to be married? She answered, it was more, we just decided it. We didn't sit down and write it. We just said, well, I guess we are. When asked if there was ever an agreement, you say there was an agreement to be married. Well, yes, I would say an implicit agreement. No one ever said we should agree to be married and write it down and put a date on it.
So, why isn't the implicit agreement good enough?
An implicit agreement?
And
well,
there was another incident, wasn't it, where when he was in the hospital, that she was designated wife?
I believe she checked him into the hospital as his wife.
So why isn't that, along with her testimony that there was just an implicit agreement, along with the fact that they did live together for however many years, why isn't that enough?
Because, Your Honor, it says in the words of the case, an actual, I don't believe an actual agreement and an implied agreement are one and the same thing.
So you're saying for a common law marriage to exist, there has to be some kind of a ceremony between the man and the woman?
I'm just reading what the language of the statute is, Your Honor. It says there must be an actual and mutual agreement. I believe that...
So then if they just moved in together and had never gone through this ceremony, whatever you're describing, that relationship, even if it was 50 years, could never ripen into a common law marriage. Correct?
That is correct, because the statutes of Oklahoma do not recognize, like South Dakota, do not recognize common law marriage. I've also cited a case that I think is very relevant, and that is in a Texas case where the... entitled in Ray Navarez versus Balin, where the applicant was a woman who had lived with an individual in Mexico, and the contrary existed. The court found that she was subject and resided in Mexico and claimed her rights as a concubine in Texas. And there the court declined to find that there was a marital relationship, saying that the a relationship of a concubine is not the same as a marriage, and denied her rights in the state of Texas. It's my belief, Your Honor, Justices, that our code is in South Dakota. It expresses a strong belief that marriage should be taken seriously and that a formal marriage is required. And we are speaking of people that I believe are actually residents of the South Dakota, and have, this is clear by the fact that they have consistently registered to vote and voted here. They own property here. The decedent had a driver's license in South Dakota. Income tax returns were filed from the state of South Dakota. And there was never anything in Oklahoma where they owned property. There was never indication that they had packed up and moved their things and left South Dakota. There was not a bank account opened in South Dakota. They did not file Oklahoma state income tax returns, which are required of any resident of Oklahoma. And I believe they were simply visitors staying with Hargrave's brother en route to their winter home in Mexico. As far as residents in Mexico, it is clear that they were never residents of Mexico by the fact that they signed a visa and when they went into Mexico, which certainly indicates that they were visitors in Mexico. In applying for those visas, they indicated their permanent address as South Dakota. So it is my belief that these individuals were clearly within the jurisdiction of the state of South Dakota. They cannot claim multiple domiciles at the same time, and therefore they cannot find that while they are domiciled in the state of South Dakota, that they are subject to contradictory laws in other jurisdictions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Gensbach, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, my name is Pat Gensbaugh, and I'm the lawyer for the appellee, Karen Hargrave. There's three areas that I wanted to address to you today in this oral argument. The first one was that the court was correct in determining that Paul Duvall and Karen Hargrave had a valid marriage which could be recognized in South Dakota. The second one is that they did have a valid marital relationship under the laws of the state of Mexico, the country of Mexico, and the state of Nuevo León in Mexico. And the third one is that under the common law case authority of the state of Oklahoma, they met the requirements while they lived in Oklahoma to have a common law marriage. And that gave the court, pursuant to SDCL 25-1-38, the basis to look at that relationship and those facts to determine whether or not they were married. And I think the facts in this case are what drove the trial court to make the decision that they had a valid marital relationship that needed to be recognized by this court or by the court in the state of South Dakota. And those facts were that Paul Duvall was a teacher out in Massachusetts, and he was single, he'd been divorced, and he came to South Dakota and he bought a piece of property in Custer. And he would spend his winters teaching school in Massachusetts, and he would come to the Custer in the summer and he would work on this cabin that he built. There came a point when he met Karen Hargrave. She was divorced. And they got to know each other. He eventually moved into her house in Massachusetts. And then there came a time when he retired as a teacher in Massachusetts. And so starting in 1996, the way they spent their life, and the court addressed this in its transcript when it said it was a little bit of a vagabond life, but they would spend their summers in Custer and their winters in Mexico. And this occurred up until about 2005. That was their routine. Now, in 1998, while they were in Mexico, on March 6th of 1998, they made their declaration in front of a public official down there that they were a husband and wife. They purchased a home in the state of Nuevo León. And at that time, they had to sign a purchase agreement in front of an authority. And they swore under oath that they were husband and wife, two separate occasions in that document, and that they were married.
But does Mexico recognize that as a common law marriage?
Mexico doesn't recognize doesn't have common law. It's a code country.
Right.
And as a code country, the way the concubinage started was for 300 years, the Catholic Church in Mexico controlled marriages. And then in 1857, President Benito Juarez adopted the reform laws and took that authority away from the Catholic Church and placed it with the civil authorities. The only problem was that there weren't very many civil authorities in the country of Mexico at that time, or the 31 states. And so people started living together without the benefit of any kind of formal relationship. And so in each one of those 31 states and in the federal government itself, it adopted a provision called concubinage, a concept that recognized a relationship and treated it as a marital relationship. The laws clearly indicate that Mexico recognizes three types of relationships, marital relationships between a man and a woman, one that occurs through civil authorities, one that comes through a religious ceremony, and the third one is through a relationship described as concubinage. And so our contention was that the provisions of that code in the state of Nuevo León and in the federal government of Mexico was in the same concept as what we recognized as a common law marriage.
So I'm just curious about what your position is. Who was whose concubine, or were they each other's concubine?
Under the laws of the state of Mexico, they were both concubines. And so whoever died first, the surviving concubine, would be entitled to the property of the deceased concubine.
I'm no expert on Mexican law. I'll confess that immediately. But, you know, in my brief research on this, one distinction that I picked up in Mexican law is that concubines can terminate their relationship at any time. They can simply say, we're no longer concubines, I'm leaving. Whereas even with a common law marriage, once that's been agreed to, it can only be ended by a divorce or by death. So isn't that a distinction here that makes your argument that a concubine relationship is the same as a common law marriage? Doesn't that kill that?
My contention is that you're right, that in Mexico, if you decide you want to terminate your concubinage relationship, you can go through that process. But if you still are in that concubinage relationship when you die, then your surviving concubine has the right to your property. And that's the situation we had here. From 1998 to 2008, Paul Duvall and Karen Hargrave lived together as concubines in Mexico. And the court found that. And what was important, in Mexico, they had
to
do...
But see, now you want us to enforce not the law of common law. You want us to enforce the law of Mexican concubinage, though. And we can't do that. We have to say, first, you're skipping a step. Don't we have to first say a concubine relationship is the same as a common law marriage relationship, and therefore they were common law married and will recognize it? We can't just skip a step and say they were concubines and therefore she gets to inherit under Mexican law.
I'm saying that Mexico treats a concubinage relationship as a marital relationship. We call it common law because it derived through the case law of the courts of the states throughout the 19th century of this country. And there's no code provision for a common law marriage in the United States. And in fact, in the state of Oklahoma, the legislature rose up and abolished common law marriages by statute. And the Supreme Court came back in 2001 and said, well, that may be what the legislature says, but we're going to look at the facts of each case and we're going to still find that you can enter into common law relationships. So what my contention is that when Judge Davis was making a determination that Karen Hargrave was his surviving spouse, he was looking at SDCL 25-1-38 and determining that under the laws of the state of Mexico, one of the three forms of a marital relationship was the concubinage. There's a marital relationship between civil authorities, between performed by a civil authority, by a religious authority, or by entering into the concubinage relationship.
But
and
back
it had
to
not
Justice
been terminated.
Back to Justice Konenkamp's question, you know, laws of Mexico that you've cited in your brief, there's nothing in those statutes or laws in Mexico that use the word marriage or suggest marriage. It's more like a probate statute that says if you have a concubinage relationship, you're entitled to inherit in Mexico. I don't see anything in the language of that statute that goes beyond inheriting property.
If you look at, and I didn't cite the other authorities available in Mexico, but there is a treatise written by a law professor from the University of San Diego on the concept of concubines. I believe it's a 2001. Jorge Vargas wrote this, in which he talks about the history. And it's not only as it relates to inheritance, but it deals with the labor law, the right to Social Security, the right to health benefits. And so in each of those chapters in that codified law in those states and in the Federation or the Republic of Mexico, they give them the same treatment as you would someone who is married under a civil authority or a religious relationship. They recognize that a concubine also has those same rights to inherit, to receive unemployment insurance compensation, workman's compensation, Social Security. And so they're treating them the same as they would as a spouse, and also the right to inherit. That's the one that
does
I
Does Mexico recognize concubinage for non-Mexican citizens, in other words, Americans?
I believe they do. It depends whether or not you can meet the requirements of the code. It doesn't. There's nothing in that code that requires you to be a citizen of the country of Mexico in order to fall within the definition of a concubine. And it's the same way with the state of Oklahoma. When the Oklahoma Supreme Court in Brooks versus Sanders reaffirmed that they recognized common law marriage, they laid out four things. And those four things were there couldn't be a legal impediment to getting married, that you had to hold yourself out as a husband and wife, you had to live and cohabitate as a husband and wife, but there was nothing in those provisions, either under the laws of Mexico or the law of Oklahoma, that required you to be a resident of those states.
You know, with all due respect to law professors, that aside, do you have any case, a United States case, from any state or federal jurisdiction that says that a Mexican concubine relationship is equivalent to a common law marriage? Because your opponent cites a case that says it's not. Do you have a case that says it is?
And I'm saying that I can't cite you a state case that says that it's a concubine is a common law marriage, because in Mexico they don't have common law. And so what I'm asking you to make the determination or affirm what Judge Davis did in looking at SDCL 25-1-38, and could they contract for that relationship?
So we would be the first court in the United States to say that a concubine relationship is the same as a common law marriage. We would be the first court to do that if we agree with you.
Correct. And so the circuit court relied upon the laws of the state of Nuevo León in determining that they had a marital relationship, and it relied upon the common law of the state of Oklahoma. And the facts that drove it to that decision, you know, were that when they made that decision in March of 1998 to live as husband and wife, they consistently spent their winters in Mexico.
You say that, Ed, that they made the decision to live as husband and wife, but by your client's own testimony, she indicated that they really made the decision not to live as husband and wife. They were going to live together, but because of their past experiences, they did not want to consider themselves as a marital couple.
No, I don't think that's correct. What she said is that they didn't want to go through a formal ceremony before, again, because they'd both done that before, and it had not worked out for them. And so they elected to use the process of what they believed they could do was a common law marriage. They thought that that was in existence everywhere. And so when they go to Mexico and they buy this house and they sign the real estate papers, they look at each other in front of a public official and they swear that we are husband and wife and that we are married. And so on that date, they recognized to themselves and announced to the public that they were husband and wife. We had a friend come up from Mexico to testify. And she testified that as long as she knew him from 1998 on, they always held themselves out as husband and wife. And that's the way the medical authorities treated him when they were in Mayo Clinic. You know, the thing that's interesting, the appellants argued that their trip to Oklahoma was a brief sojourn. But that's really not the case if you look at the facts. After he was injured in March of 2005, he went to that rehab hospital in Broken Bow. And he spent some time there. And he got worse. And so he had to go to the Mayo Clinic. And he spent over a month at the Mayo Clinic. Upon his discharge from the Mayo Clinic, he gets on Interstate 90 and he heads west. And he gets to Custer. And what does he do in Custer? He packs up his personal property and his pet dog that he left with somebody. And he moves to Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. And he never comes back to Custer after that until June of 2008 when he comes back to climb the Needle Spires and falls off the rock and kills himself. So from 2005 through 2008, he's living in Oklahoma. He buys a motorcycle in Colorado. He doesn't bring it to South Dakota to register it. He takes it to Oklahoma and registers it there. He pays taxes on the motorcycle in Oklahoma. Karen Hargrave gets a driver's license in the state of Oklahoma while they're living there.
Wasn't he voting here?
They did. She had explained that in 2006 they applied for absentee ballots. And that's one of the things this court has said, is that when the court is looking at the facts and circumstances and trying to make a determination on domicile, you look at those facts and circumstances. And she said that in 2006 they wanted to vote for one particular candidate, Stephanie Hursa. They wanted to make sure she got elected, and so they asked for an absentee ballot, and they did vote for her. But in that same year, 2006, they file a 1040A form in which Mr. Duvall says that Karen is a family member dependent of his. In 2007, when he fills out the 2006 1040 form, the long version, he identifies Karen as his spouse. So again, he's making the acknowledgement in his income tax returns she's a family member, and in 2006, when he does the long form, he actually identifies her as his spouse.
Mr. Ginsburg, any time you have two different countries, one other area of law is treaties. And I didn't say anything in any of the briefs where it was addressed. I'm not saying there should be, or there is, but are you aware of whether or not there are any treaties between the countries that deal with this issue?
I'm not. What I did on my research, it reveals that the legislature at 19-18-5 makes a provision that if a party is coming into a state court for a trial court and we want that trial court to rely upon the laws of another country, we make a motion pursuant to SDCL 19-18-5 and ask the court to take judicial notice of the laws of that country. And in this case, we asked the court and we provided the court with the information about the laws of the state of Nuevo León. And that information, the court did take judicial notice. There was no objection to that by the other side. And so the court relied upon the submissions that we gave it as to the state of the law. And then we did the same thing under, I think, 19-18-1 for the state of Oklahoma. We asked the court to take judicial notice, not only of the statutory laws, but of the case law in particular that reaffirmed the right to common law marriage. So I don't know that you need to reach, in this case, whether or not there was a treaty, because our legislature has provided a remedy for the courts to use or the parties to use to get a court to recognize those laws, and that's what we did in this case here. And the court, we did that, and there was no objection to the process that was used by the court or the laws that were used by the court.
Now, the first place they apparently cohabited is Massachusetts, right?
Correct.
Does that have anything to do, any relevance to this case at all?
I don't believe, I mean, just to show that the beginning of their relationship, and that when they finally went to Mexico and they decided to buy a piece of property, they had to make a decision, because in Mexico it was important if you're a spouse, if you recognize as a spouse, there's no provision for joint tenancy, as you can see in that deed that or that purchase agreement that I signed, the surviving spouse inherits your property.
So what you're saying is they live together in Massachusetts but have no agreement there that they're going to have a common law marriage. Come to South Dakota, once again no agreement. They go to Mexico and there they decide to formalize their relationship.
Correct.
Okay.
Because then they realized they had to do something. We're buying a piece of property, and we're going to have to make a decision.
So can they have separate common law relationships? I mean, is timing an issue here? If they can go from one state to another, and each state recognizes a common law relationship, are you saying that they can renew it each time, create it so that, say, they're common law married in Mexico, they're common law married in Oklahoma, they're common law married wherever else will recognize it? Or does it make a difference when they make the agreement, when and where they make the agreement?
I think it makes a difference when they make the agreement. And they made the agreement in March of 1998 when they went to Oklahoma and started living there in the winter or the summers of 2005 onward. The purpose of that is when they fill out their income tax return, they're letting the authorities, the government know I still intend to treat her as my wife. It was a continuous relationship.
So where did they make the agreement in this? Did they make it in Mexico or Oklahoma?
They made it in Mexico, and then it was reaffirmed in their relationship in Oklahoma.
So actually they're married twice?
No, it was just a continuation of that relationship, but the state of Oklahoma could recognize it too.
But there has to be a contract, as I understand it. Under Oklahoma law, it says, you know, a mutual agreement, an actual and mutual agreement. So are they married? If they made it in Mexico, they don't need to make it in Oklahoma because they're, by your argument, they're married in Mexico. But are you saying that they can remarry in Mexico?
Well, what we tried to do, Your Honor, is we wanted to make sure that there was no question about the existence of the relationship. So we argued the law on concubinage and the facts that we had that existed there. And then our argument was that if the court did not accept finding that a concubinage constituted a marital relationship, that a trial court could recognize here under 25-1-38, we still had a marital relationship based upon their circumstances in Oklahoma, because obviously when they filled out those income tax returns in Oklahoma acknowledging that they were husband and wife, or him identifying her as a dependent spouse on the 1048, that they had confirmed again that it was their intention to be a husband and wife, and they cohabitated in Oklahoma, held themselves out as husband and wife in Oklahoma. The elements that we set forth in the brief and that we provided to Judge Davis, he went through those elements, he made findings on those, and while the appellants make an argument as to the domiciliary of the parties, it's our contention that, as the court raised on their questions, the domiciliary is not an appropriate question, because in each of those cases, whether it's under concubinage and the laws that are there, or under the Oklahoma case of Brooks versus Sanders, they never make a requirement that you have to be a resident of that state. You just have to spend enough time there to establish that relationship. Now, in Mexico, it's 5 years. You have to have that relationship for a period of 5 years. Oklahoma doesn't say that. Doesn't give you any specific time. Just has to show that you have to go through the necessary steps to establish to the people down there that you're intending to consider yourself a husband and wife, a marital couple. So based upon the facts that were presented to the circuit court and the court's finding, we're asking this court to affirm the decision of the circuit court and find that Karen Hargrave is the surviving spouse of Paul Duvall, and to allow her to continue as a personal representative of the estate of Paul Duvall. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ginsbaugh. Mr. Baldwin, you have 10 minutes, sir.
First of all, I'd like to make one correction, and that's with respect to the matter of Mexican law, and I believe counsel misspoke when he said there are three types of marriages. In his own brief, the citation is that there are three types of union, and nothing in the Mexican laws that have been cited make any conclusion that a marriage, they do not recognize common law marriage, and there's nothing to suggest that a concubinage is in fact a type of marriage union. And again, there's no authority in South Dakota code to recognize a concubinage, and when we try to blur the distinction between the two, there is no authority for doing so. Back to Oklahoma. Again, it is a clear requirement that there be an actual and mutual agreement to be married. And there has been no testimony that was ever accomplished. And I believe it's the burden of proof upon Hargrave to establish that actual and mutual agreement. And I read you some of the testimony and some of her statements, which fall short of testifying to any agreement. And in fact, the court never found there was such an agreement, and there is no finding by the court that that exception was met, simply the conclusion that there was a common law marriage. I would like to read from you from the ruling from the court from the bench. It says, the judge said, in fact, a common law marriage in Oklahoma, he's referring to, occurs upon the happening of three events in Oklahoma. There's a declaration of the parties of an intent to marry, and here there wasn't an outright declaration of an intent to marry. And following through with that, there was a discussion as to whether they needed to or not and why they would or would not. Apparently failed marriages for both of them in part, or perhaps a death for Mrs. Hargrave, that testimony wasn't presented, other than we know she was a single person. So the court even acknowledged in its ruling from the bench that they had not met that obligation.
Could the declaration in Mexico suffice?
I'm sorry?
Could that declaration, assuming they declared to be married in Mexico, could that suffice to meet Oklahoma's requirement?
Well, I don't believe so, Your Honor. But in the same token, I don't see any evidence of a declaration of an intent to marry. Now, counsel has argued that the obtaining of a property is when they declared themselves to be husband and wife and acquired a property in Mexico. Certainly, that's not a ceremony, and certainly it's not anything that can be construed as an agreement to be married. It's simply representing themselves as being husband and wife. Much of this argument has been, in fact, a claim that the couple held themselves out as husband and wife, and I can debate that all day. There was very few things where they did hold themselves out as husband and wife. Hargrave did not have her name on the residence in South Dakota. All of the vehicles were titled, even the motorcycle that was licensed in Oklahoma was not titled in both names. There is not even a magazine subscription that was addressed to Mr. and Mrs. Paul Hargrave, or Mr. and Mrs. Paul Duvall. So there's little evidence of that. But despite that, whatever little evidence there is, this only goes to the allegation that we should recognize common law marriage. I submit in South Dakota you could have 10-foot-high letters on the top of your house saying Mr. and Mrs. and have everything you owned and tell everybody you know that you're husband and wife, and that will not allow a common law marriage. We even have denied that there was a common law marriage when there were children of the couple, and despite the consequences to the children. So the requirements to establish a common law marriage, there are very critical requirements.
So what is at stake here? You mentioned some of the property. I'm just curious now, what does he leave? Is the Mexican home, is that part of what's being disputed here, or does Mexican law take care of that?
The Mexican law, we have not concerned ourselves with that, and that's not really been an issue in the trial. It's the South Dakota property, which was titled in his name.
And the pension?
I'm sorry?
And his pension?
There's no pension.
Okay.
The property consists of vehicles, all of which were titled in his name and his name alone. There were separate bank accounts. There's no nothing that was disposed of by joint ownership.
He was receiving a pension, though.
He was.
And does the pension list a beneficiary?
I don't know that that issue has arisen. I don't believe that there's any residual benefits of the pension after his death.
All right. Thank you.
In conclusion, I guess I would like to return back to the question of the jurisdiction and the requirement, which is clearly the law in South Dakota at this point, of the Garcia case, that in order to recognize this marriage, it would need to be recognized that the parties were domiciled in the jurisdiction in which that occurred. If this ruling is allowed to stand, we will significantly change the law in the state of South Dakota. And I believe there is good reason for that requirement. It's often said that our laws are to regulate us and to protect us. And when we are protected by the laws, such as the law not recognizing a common law marriage, that law protected Paul Duvall and his estate from that claim. That's the clear legislative intent. To allow this case allows that you can take the protection of that law and leave it at the doorstep. And when you travel into other jurisdictions, you are subject to loss of that protection. Your domicile is something you carry in your bag with your pajamas, and wherever you land, it might become your domicile. If you consider the implication of this finding, would be that any man who took his secretary on an illicit trip to Oklahoma, registered it as husband and wife, would come home to find himself married. That's the extent of this ruling. I do not believe that's the intent. I believe that these people are clearly protected. The decedent is clearly protected by the laws of the state of South Dakota, and that it is an important and necessary requirement before exception is made to our prohibition against common law marriage that it be required that those parties were domiciled in the state. This is not the Supreme Court of Oklahoma, and it's not the Supreme Court of Mexico. And these rights and this property and these individuals are here in South Dakota, and here is where they deserve the protection of our statute. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baldwin.